Chapter 11. Baggy rushed into my office late the following morning with the hot news that Lucian Wilbanks had just withdrawn his motion to change venue. His first windy opinion was that the Pagets didn't want the trial moved to another county. They knew Danny was dead guilty and that he would almost certainly be convicted by a properly selected jury anywhere. Their sole chance was to get a jury they could either buy or intimidate. Since all guilty verdicts must be unanimous, they needed only a single vote in Danny's favor. Just one vote, and the jury would hang itself. The judge would be required by law to declare a mistrial. It would certainly be retried, but with the same result. After three or four attempts, the state would give up. I was sure Baggy had been at the courthouse all morning, replaying with his little club the venue hearing and borrowing the conclusions of the lawyers. He explained gravely that the hearing the day before had been staged by Lucian Wilbanks for two reasons. First, Lucian was baiting the Times into running another large photo of Danny, this one in jailhouse garb. Second, Wilbanks wanted to get me on the witness stand to peel off some skin.
"He damn sure did that," Baggy said.
"Thanks, Baggy," I said. Wilbanks was setting the stage for the trial, one that he knew all along would take place in Clanton, and he wanted the Times to tone down its coverage. The third or fourth reason was that Lucian Wilbanks never missed an opportunity to grandstand in front of a crowd. Baggy had seen it many times, and he shared a few stories. I'm not sure I followed all of his expansive thinking, but at that moment, nothing else made sense. It seemed such a waste of time and effort to put on a two-hour hearing knowing full well it was all a show. I figured worse things have happened in courtrooms. The third feast was a pot roast, and we ate on the porch as it rained steadily. As usual, I confessed that I'd never had a pot roast, so Miss Callie described the recipe and the preparation in detail. She lifted the lid off a large iron pot in the center of the table and closed her eyes as the thick aroma wafted upward. I had only been awake for an hour, and at that moment I could have eaten the tablecloth. "It was her simplest dish," she said. "Take a beef rump roast, leave the fat on it, place it in the bottom of the pot, then cover it with new potatoes, onions, turnips, carrots, and beets. Add some salt, pepper, and water. Put it in the oven on slow bake and wait 5 hours. She filled my plate with beef and vegetables, then covered it all with a thick sauce.
"The beets give it all a purple tint," she explained.
She asked me if I wanted to say the blessing, and I declined. Praying was not something I had done in a long time. She was far more gifted. She took my hands and we closed our eyes. As she spoke to heaven, the rain tapped the tin roof above our heads. "Where's Esau?" I asked after my first three large bites.
"At work. Sometimes he can get free for lunch. Often he cannot."
She was preoccupied with something and finally said,
"Can I ask you a question that's somewhat personal?"
"Sure, I guess."
"Are you a Christian child?"
"I'm sure I am. My mother used to take me to church on Easter." That was not satisfactory. Whatever she was looking for, that wasn't it.
"What kind of church?"
"Episcopalian, St. Luke's in Memphis."
"I'm not sure we have one of those in Clanton."
"I haven't seen one." Not that I'd been searching diligently for a house of worship. "What kind of church do you attend?" I asked.
"Church of God in Christ," she answered quickly, and her entire face had a serene glow. "My pastor is the Reverend Thurston Small, a fine man of God, a powerful preacher, too. You should come hear him."